Now, of course, social change is going to involve a lot of confrontation at times. So we need to learn how to use nonviolent communication when we are up against people who are opposed to what we are after, but they don't know how to express themselves in a way that clearly communicates their feelings and needs. So we need to know how, under these confrontive conditions, how to hear people's feelings and needs, no matter how they are communicating. So one example of that was in a social change project I was involved in Illinois. This one involved a school that we had created, but we wanted to go from this school to the whole system functioning in harmony with the principles of this school. It was very hard to get this school going, but we finally, after much resistance, we did get federal funding that allowed us to start this school. However, to the next school board election, after the school was created, and even though it won a national award for educational excellence, academic achievement went up, vandalism went down, in spite of it being successful, 4 members got elected to the board to get rid of the superintendent and the school. Well, we could see then that if we were to have this social change project survive, we were going to need now to communicate with these people who were vehemently opposed to what we were doing. It wasn't easy to get a meeting with this board. It was a board of 7 people that we wanted to meet with to see if we could use nonviolent communication to connect in a way in which everybody's needs could get met. It took us 10 months to arrange a 3-hour meeting. First of all, he wouldn't answer my phone calls. They wouldn't answer my letters. I went down to the office once, but they wouldn't see me. So it took us 10 months, and during that time, we had to find somebody that had access to them and train this person in our skills so that this person could go to them and see if it was possible to work out a meeting. And she did. She finally got them after 10 months to have the board meet with me and the school superintendent. And they had conditions. They didn't want the press to know about this because this would be embarrassing if they were seen talking with people that they got elected to get rid of. Okay, now, how did nonviolent communication help me in that setting? First of all, I knew I had to do some work on myself before we had that meeting because I had enemy images of this board. I had trouble imagining them as human beings. I had a lot of pain inside as a result of some things they had said about me. For example, one of them owned the local newspaper. And I had read an article he had written about me in which he said, "Are you aware that our beloved superintendent," and he put beloved in quotes because everybody knew he hated the superintendent, "has brought in his Jew again to brainwash our teachers so that they can brainwash our students." That was only one sample of things that I had heard this man had said about me, and so I had a lot to deal with inside. I also knew that he was the head of the local John Birch Society, and I had some inner judgments about people who belonged to that society. So I had to do some despair work. Despair work, a very important part of social change. Despair work is Joanna Macy's concept, and she's a person working in social change that I admire very much. She points out how important it is to do despair work. And I like very much how she integrates Buddhism into her social change efforts. Sees the importance of spirituality and social change. They go together. If we have a good, powerful spirituality, we are much more likely to reach our social change objectives. So the despair work took this form. I got together with my colleagues on this project the night before our meeting. And I said to them, "It's going to be hard for me to see this man as a human being tomorrow when we go in there. I've got so much rage inside, so I need to do some work on myself." So my team listened empathically to what was going on in me. I had this wonderful opportunity of expressing all of my pain and being understood. They could hear the rage I felt, and then behind the rage, my fear about my hopelessness that we could ever get such people to connect with us in a way that would be good for all. It took 3 hours this night before to do all this work because I had deep pain, a lot of despair, before I could go in the next day. And then part of that time I said, "Those of you who have seen him communicate, Could we do a little role-playing? Because I want to try to see his humanness through the way he usually speaks. I had never seen the man, but they had, and they showed me how he communicated. So I worked hard the night before to see his humanness so that I wouldn't see him as an enemy. And I was glad we did that the night before, because the very next day as we were walking in, he and I happened to be walking through the door at the same time, and the first thing he said to me is, "This is a waste of time. If you and the school superintendent want to help this community, you'd leave." My first reaction was to want to grab him and say, "Look, you said we were going to have a meeting." And anyway, I took a deep breath. Thank goodness for the despair work the night before. I could get better control over my feelings and tried to connect with his humanness. I said, "It sounds like you're feeling kind of hopeless about anything good coming out of this meeting." He seemed a little surprised that I would try to hear his feelings. He said, "That's right. The project you and the superintendent are doing is destructive to this community. This permissive philosophy of just allowing children to do whatever they want is ridiculous." Again, I had to take a deep breath because I was frustrated that he would see it as permissiveness. It showed me that we hadn't made clear what our project was. If he had seen it, he would know we had rules, we had regulations, but they weren't set up on the basis of punishment. They weren't administered by authorities. They were worked out in the community between the teachers and the students jointly. So I wanted to jump in and get defensive, but I took a deep breath, thanks to the despair work the night before. And then I could see his humanness. So I said to him, "So you really want some recognition for how important it is to have order in the schools?" He looked at me strangely again. "That's right. You people are menaces. We had great schools in this community before you and the superintendent came." Again, my first reaction was to show that all the violence that had been going on in the schools, how the academic achievement had been very low. But I took a deep breath again, and I said, "So there's many things about the schools that you want to support and protect." Anyway, the meeting went pretty well, because even though he was speaking in ways that, if I hadn't done enough work on myself, would have been very easy for me to keep him in this enemy image. But by my continuing to hear what was alive in him, respectfully trying to connect with his needs, I could see him then better able to open up and better understand what we were talking about. I left that meeting feeling very encouraged. I went back to my hotel room, and I felt really good. And the phone rang, and it was this man. And he said, "You know, I'm sorry I said some of the things about you in the past. I guess I didn't understand your program. I want to hear more about how you put this together and where you got the ideas and so forth." So we talked like brothers for 40 minutes on the phone. I poured out to him all of this. And then shortly afterwards, my colleagues came to pick me up and take me to the airport so I could go home. And all the way to the airport, I babbled to my colleagues how great it felt. I said, "This is proof of what we're talking about, that if even you see the other people, the other side as human beings, you can connect no matter what it is." And I was feeling so good. It reinforced my hopes for social change, that if we can get over these enemy images, we can connect with anybody. I told him about this phone call. The next day, a member of my team called me up and said, "Marshall, I got very bad news for you." I said, "What's that?" "We should have warned you. One of his tactics is to call people on the phone, and he records what they say. And then he takes portions of it out and uses it to ridicule him in his newspaper. It's an old trick of his. We should have warned you." I didn't know who I wanted to kill first, him or me. Me for being so stupid as to trust somebody like that, to think that you can change such a person. Anyway, I was despondent. Well, now here's what happened. When I told this person driving me to the airport this, they told another member of our team. And that member of the team said, "Did anybody ever tell Marshall about this guy and how he's used that tactic in the past?" And anyway, by the time it got back to me, it was as though he had done it to me. He didn't do it to me. And in the next board meeting, he voted in favor of our program, even though he got elected to get rid of it. That was an important lesson for me in social change. It showed me how it took me 3 hours the night before to go from my enemy image of the other side, to deal with my pain, the despair about social change, to get myself in a position that I could see the other side as human beings. And it took me 5 seconds the day after to lose that again on the basis of a rumor about the other side. So this is, for me, a very important part of social change, to build into it this continual keeping connected to the spiritual energy that I think needs to be behind social change, that it comes from our seeing the beauty of what we're for, and not that there's bad guys that we're out to conquer.